You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight will be selected issues in employment law, in particular as they relate to government employees. If you're listening and you have questions, even if not on the topic of government employment, my guests are prepared to answer any of your employment law questions, even if not in the area of government employee. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134 here in the studio. If you're calling from outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. But before we begin, I'm pleased to once again announce the return of Call a Lawyer feature. If you have questions for Call a Lawyer, the number that will not place you on the air is 1-800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. That will not put you on the radio. Each of the lawyers standing by will be there to answer your legal questions off the air. And they're all longtime supporters of Call a Lawyer, including in the areas of tax law and real estate law, Frank Adam from Pacifica. Frank is a lawyer, a real estate broker, and a CPA. If it has to do with numbers, you want to talk to Frank. In the areas of landlord-tenant law, Jessica Chilek of San Francisco. Family law, Janet Frankel, certified specialist of San Francisco. Patent law, aviation law, Lemon Law, BBB arbitration, Ron Rohde from Palo Alto. Also in patent law, prosecution of patents, preparation, prosecution and litigation, Myrna Schelling, senior counsel at Carr and Farrell in Menlo Park. Also in landlord-tenant, Sal Timpano of San Francisco. Again, the number to call is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. Moreover, to take calls tomorrow, for bankruptcy law, Leon Baer, certified specialist, will take calls Thursday, October 25th, between 9 a.m. and noon at 800-477-3111. Again, that's 800-477-3111. Be sure to tell them when you call that you are calling for Call a Lawyer. For workers' compensation law, Robert Wyman, certified specialist, will take calls at his San Francisco office tomorrow, Thursday, between 9 and 11. His number is 415-387-8100. And I will give that information again later on in the program. My guests in the studio tonight are two attorneys, each with employment law practices that feature government employee issues. Ellen Mendelson of San Francisco, the law office of Mellon Anderson Mendelson, a professional corporation, focuses on representing public and other employees. With over 25 years' experience, Ellen is a member of the Labor and Employment Section of the California Lawyers Association. Gina Rokanova is a principal at the firm of Myers Nave and is chair of the Labor and Employment Practice Group. With more than 20 years' experience in both the public and private sector, Gina has negotiated labor agreements with major unions and regularly represents government clients in various labor and employment proceedings. Let me welcome each of you, Gina, Ellen, to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Well, and again, while we may be speaking about certain specific areas, you may call with any question for our employment lawyers. Again, the phone number to us here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of the local dialing area, please call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And again, Ellen, Gina, welcome. I'd like to start here. We've been talking about public employees. What's different about public employees from employees who work for private companies?
excuse me. The first issue or the first difference is that public employees are protected by the state and federal constitutions in relation to their employment relationship with their employer. Gina can tell you what rights that...
Sure. So that comes with some specific rights, particularly the ones that we're most familiar about hearing, First Amendment rights. And it's funny because all over social media, people are fond of talking about their First Amendment rights. Well, you only have a First Amendment right against your employer if you're a public employee. There's also a property right that public employees have, most public employees, that says that you cannot be deprived of your job without due process. And then there's a number of other rights, again, coming from the state and federal constitutions, including privacy rights and some others.
And for those that are listening that perhaps don't have a legal background or very strong background in civics, the Constitution tends to be a contract between individuals and their states and or the federal government, doesn't necessarily apply to things going on between you and your neighbors.
That's right. The Constitution constrains the government is a good way to think about it.
So in this instance, the primary difference is that the constitutional protections apply to the employment relationship, which in the private sector they wouldn't.
Right. And of course, there are a whole host of other protections that private sector employees have, but those are mostly by statute. One exception is that the California Constitution does provide a right of privacy to employees in both the public and private sectors, but that is unique.
And the privacy protections also differ in terms of public employees. For instance, their First Amendment rights are circumscribed in the way that if they're talking about their job broadly, the employer can control their speech in relation to their job duties. The case that deals with that, there's a Supreme Court case, Garcetti v. Sabalos, involved a district attorney who revealed things about a search warrant publicly and was disciplined and complained that he could not be disciplined because he was protected by the First Amendment. And the Supreme Court said, no, if you're speaking about your job duties, your employer can control what you're saying, even if it is a public entity. And the contrast is the Google case, the guy who published something about complaining about women and that they weren't capable, and Google was going to fire him, and there was a whole media onslaught about whether he could be fired. And as a private employer, Google can fire you for writing an email that they disagree with. In the public, the private sector, I'm sorry, you can be generally fired for any reason or no reason.
As long as it's is not an illegal reason. And there are some protections there. And it's interesting you mentioned the James Damore matter because he did challenge. He was clever in the way he challenged his termination because he brought it to the National Labor Relations Board under one of the broadest protections for private sector employees, which is the right to engage in concerted activity under the National Labor Relations Act. And in this particular case, the National Labor Relations Board found that his speech was not protected by the act, which was, I think, the right outcome and certainly helpful for employers who were trying to find the balance between protecting concerted activity and also protecting the rights to their employees to not be discriminated against in the workplace.
So in a moment, I would like to ask you a bit about what specific rights that gives the employee, what specific rights, if any, that gives the employer. I do see that there's a call working its way through, and one of these days we may see the name of the caller so I can actually announce it. But obviously, you're talking about a different basket of rights for the employees and potentially some limits on the employers, maybe some additional rights in some limited instances as well. And that's really where I'd like to go if that piece of paper ever makes it over here.
Okay, I can talk about a public employee has a right to due process before the property interest that is protected by the Constitution is interfered with. So before the public employee can be disciplined or discharged, before there can be any interference with his pay, any substantial interference with his pay or her pay, they're entitled to a due process hearing called a Skelly hearing. And the Skelly hearing is the opportunity for the employee to say why they shouldn't be disciplined or why some other discipline should be imposed. And until that Skelly hearing is held, the employer is not allowed to interfere with pay or your working. So that's the difference between a private employee and a public employee.
Of course, there are some public employees who are at-will employees. It's up to the governing body to grant the property interests in the first place. But as long as they have some policy in place saying these are just cause employees or they have certain process rights before they can be terminated or suspended, then, yes, they do have those property right protections.
That is true.
Donna from Burlingame, welcome. You are on Your Legal Rights.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to have this opportunity. So I want to ask a question that has to do with international labor rights. I happen to be one of the few people that has had a permit to go in and out of Gaza. As you know, maybe that Mr. Trump and the administration has cut the budget for all UN agencies. And the question I have has to do with the union and the rights of a union when their employer is downsizing. Is there a right to collective bargaining when you see the organization, you know, struggling to survive? We've helped the union file a case and file a complaint with the International Labor Organization, and it's pretty well stalled. So it would be helpful to have your insight as to what are the rights of a union when the organization is downsizing? Can they still pursue collective bargaining?
Well, I can't speak to international law. I am not well versed in that area. So thank you, Donna, for giving us the first stumper of the evening. But under U.S. law, so if it's a private employer, that's covered by federal law. It's generally considered to be within the employer's purview to decide whether to downsize. However, many collective bargaining agreements do have provisions that require an employer to sit down with the union and discuss it before they make that decision. And also, even if they don't have that language, they may have to sit down with the union to meet and confer over the impact of those layoffs.
Thank you. If they don't, is there any way to appeal?
So if an employer does not meet its obligation to meet and confer, and again, this is under U.S. law, this is under federal law that would apply to private sector, they could go to the National Labor Relations Board and file what they call an unfair labor practice charge, stating that the employer had an obligation to meet and confer and they didn't do it. And then the board, the regional attorney, would take a look at that complaint and decide whether to proceed with formal proceedings against the employer.
Or they could first grieve it. And the terms of the contract, the memorandum of understanding between the union and the employer will specify methods to appeal or to grieve a decision that is claimed to violate the terms of the contract. And that's really the first avenue of review. And to go to the NLRB, there is an incredibly short statute of limitations. It's a six-month statute from the date the cause arises. So and they will turn you away if you're not within the 6 months. It's a difficult claim to meet, and if you think there's a violation that's recoverable or addressable by the NLRB, don't wait.
Got it. I think that there's a parallel process with the International Labor Organization, and also it's an interesting thing about UN agencies. They are a law unto themselves, so hopefully, even though this group is not a member, that they could take it on. But it's good to know about the U.S. version or the U.S. analog for it, and I thank you for your time, you know, for taking my question.
Thanks for the question.
Donna, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight will be selected issues in employment law. In particular, we're speaking of government employment. My guests, Gina Rokanova and Ellen Mendelson, have some 45 years of employment law experience between them. While we may be speaking about certain specific areas, such as government employee, you can call regarding any question for our employment lawyers. Again, the phone number us here in the studio, 415-841-4134, 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of the local area, please call us toll-free, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Where we left off, we were talking about your right to continued employment with a government employee and how that differs. Your right to a Skelly hearing and the like. It wasn't that many years ago, didn't we, for a while, have a covenant of an expectation of continued employment as long as you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, absent some good cause?
Well, there is a strong tradition and actually a statute in California that says that now, this is in the private sector, absent anything to the contrary, employees are presumed to be at will, meaning they can leave their employment or be asked to leave their employment for any reason or no reason at all. Yeah. But of course, that's gotten chipped away at, where there are, you know, lots of brackets and parentheses because there are many reasons that have been defined as illegal reasons. As a practical matter, at-will employment doesn't really mean that you can just get rid of somebody because you don't like the way they've looked at you. It's generally advisable to have a reason.
Well, right. It's at-will subject to the caveat that you can be fired for any reason or no reason except for a discriminatory or retaliatory reason. And so frankly, if they didn't like the way somebody looked at you, unless it was some kind of sexual harassment, I suppose you could be fired for that.
You could be fired for any reason or no reason, but perhaps not the wrong reason.
Correct.
That's right.
With that, Ken in San Francisco, welcome. You're on Your Legal Rights.
Hey, good evening. Question. Employee in a call center in California wears a sign that says Black Lives Matter. She writes this on a piece of paper and tapes it to her shirt. The wrinkle is it is a state agency. Allowable or not?
Was any disruption caused by that?
Well, apparently it was a response to someone voicing support for Donald Trump.
Hmm. Well, I would take a look at that case under First Amendment analysis. Certainly, writing on a shirt, there's good precedent for that being covered by the First Amendment. And, of course, if we're talking about a state agency, we're talking about a public employer. And then the next question would be, is this a matter of public concern? I think there's a decent chance that a court would consider a statement, Black Lives Matter, especially given the political context, to be a matter of public concern. That would form the basis for a First Amendment claim. Ellen, would you agree?
I would agree. And there would be a balancing test between whether there was disruption to the work environment versus the employee's right to make a statement, on the level of scrutiny that would be constitutional scrutiny that would be applied would probably be the rational basis. And is there a rational basis for the employer to ask this person not to tape that sign to their clothes.
Did you say it was a call center? So this is somebody who wouldn't necessarily be seen?
Apparently there is some bickering between employees, and it's a large number of employees.
Well, then that's a problem in the whole workplace, and that does sound like it's something that...
So often employers sidestep issues like that by having rules of general application that are not content specific. So rather than having a rule saying you can't have a shirt saying Black Lives Matter, or you can't have a hat that says Make America Great Again, they'll just say you can't have clothing with words on it.
Right. And there were actually some police cases where they were wearing pins on their lapel. I forget what the pins were, and they were limited. And then law enforcement's a slightly different because it's a uniformed workforce. But the question would be, is it disruptive? And it sounds like it's having a, it sounds like it's a workforce with trouble to begin with.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Before we move on, once again, our Call a Lawyer Night lawyers are standing by for your calls. If you have questions for Call a Lawyer, the number that will not place you on the air is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. You won't end up on the radio. Each of the lawyers standing by to answer your legal questions off the air are longtime supporters of Call a Lawyer and your legal rights, including Frank Adam from Pacifica, Jessica Chilek from San Francisco. We're talking about tax law, real estate law, landlord-tenant law, respectively. Patent law, aviation law, lemon law, arbitration. Ron Rohde from Palo Alto, also with patent law, prosecution and preparation of patents, litigation. Myrna Schelling, senior counsel at Carr and Farrell in Menlo Park. Landlord-tenant, again, we have Sal Timpano from San Francisco. And again, the number to call for those lawyers, 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. And available for your calls tomorrow. In bankruptcy law, Leon Bayer, certified specialist, will take calls tomorrow, Thursday, October 25th, between 9 and noon, at 800-477-3111. In workers' compensation law, Robert Wyman, certified specialist, will take calls tomorrow, Thursday, between 9 and 11 at 415-387-8100 for either. Be sure to tell them you're calling from Call a Lawyer. Chris from San Francisco, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks. I have a question. I'm curious whether your guests have any comments on the public employee pension cases that are currently pending before the state Supreme Court.
which cases are, I know, do you have a specific question?
So my understanding is that there is one main case that is pending, and that a bunch of other ones have been granted and held pending that case, and that it's going to involve some sort of issue about when a public employee's right to a particular benefit accrues.
Yeah, those disputes have been going on for some time, and my firm has been involved in some of that litigation. We've got some clients with interests at stake, so it's probably better that I don't comment directly on that litigation.
On those cases. And the question as to when a benefit accrues, on a lot of the cases that I handle involve people who are terminated while their applications for disability retirement are pending, and once they're no longer an employee, the right generally, or the cases have held, that you no longer have a right to a disability pension, And that is generally where the law is now. The other question is, can they take away pensions? And I deal quite a bit with those cases, too, where CalPERS is like canceling a disability pension that it awarded. And the avenue in those cases is to go through the Office of Administrative Hearings, and have a hearing. And very difficult to win. And the public employee pension world is kind of in an upheaval because it can't afford to maintain itself.
And PEPRA has made a huge difference. I mean, there's been an ongoing discussion about vested rights, and it remains to be seen where that will all ultimately wind up.
That's true. Well, my remedy is just hire more employees. We need more public employees.
All right. Thank you very much.
Chris, thank you for joining us. And I'm stalling for a moment as another call makes its way. Perhaps not. Gabriella from San Francisco.
Read the fine print.
Gabriella was asking if there is more info on the Scully case.
On the Scully hearing process? Well, it's really not a hearing. It's an opportunity for the employee to say why he or she should not be terminated. I have had Scully hearings at which I've brought witnesses to testify, sometimes useful. And once the Scully is decided, there should be a written decision from which you can determine why the termination was upheld. And from there, the employee has further appeal rights.
And just to back up a step for people that are not familiar with the process, a Scully hearing is actually with usually the management of the government employer, is it not?
Yes.
And it's not until after the Scully hearing that either side can appeal it to a neutral fact finder, whether it's an arbitrator or the union or whomever it might be under the collective bargaining agreement.
Right, or yes. A personnel board or whatever. And just for background, Scully, the name of it comes from Scully v. State Personnel Board, which was a 1975 California Supreme Court case in which it was established that public employees do have a privacy interest in their employment. So we call it a Scully hearing because that was the case that established that right to begin with.
So in essence, a government employee would have a property right. They have certain vested rights that don't exist in the public sector. The private sector equivalent would be when your boss calls you into his or her office for you to try to make a case as they're sliding papers across the counter.
Well, the Scully process is meant to be a bit more substantive than that. And of course, when your private sector employer does that, their mind may already be made up. And they may, you know, if they give you an opportunity to plead your case at all, it's entirely optional.
It's true.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
So with that, we've spoken about the fact that private employees are presumed to be at will, unless the reason is a bad reason. Better there would be no reason at all. In the public employees, they have a property right. Therefore, they have the Scully hearing and those hearings that follow it. Before we go further, let me call on William from Belvedere. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
I would like to know whether I'm sure that the guests, because they are lawyers, know what goes on in other countries, say the Scandinavian countries, where there is not an inherent contentiousness that exists in our legal system and in our society as a whole, say in Germany, where at least from what I hear, labor and management are not at each other's throats is there a difference?
You know, again, we keep getting the international questions this evening, and I am not, I don't claim to be an expert in that area. I do have some understanding, though, that, you know, there are, that labor has a part to play in corporate governance. And whether that leads to a less contentious relationship or not, I can't say, but I do know that there are unionized employers, some of whom are right here in the Bay Area, that actually have very harmonious relationships with their unions. You just don't hear about them because they're not the ones making the news because their employees are on strike. And, you know, even employers that that do have at times labor strife, and I represent a lot of those. I know they work very hard on the relationship. It means a lot to them. And so it's while negotiations can be contentious, can be adversarial, I think employers and unions mainly focus on trying to get a deal that everyone can live with, and that's the task of labor relations.
But so few employees are actually unionized outside of government anymore. What is it, 8%? It's nothing.
And it's historic lows, but there are some, in the private sector as well as the public sector.
Yeah, well, and I would love to see more unionization. I'd love to see the Uber drivers unionize, and that would be a wonderful. And the Teamsters would probably take them, it would lift everyone, I think.
Well, they'd have to be determined to be employees first.
Well, certainly, if in Europe, as you say, that actually labor has seats on the board of directors, then that automatically changes the entire tone. The whole ambiance changes.
I imagine it would. And I know that there are some organizations here in the U.S. that have tried to, if not exactly replicate that, at least work in partnership with their labor unions and sort of bring them more into decision-making roles and have them be more invested in similar interests and try to harmonize those interests.
Well, I think it's very interesting because one thing that I'm aware of, and I'm sure you are too, is at every level of our society, everybody is at everybody else's throat. And I just feel there has to be a better way to do things. And at least, again, I don't know, but I think, like, for instance, in the Scandinavian countries, that's less present.
William, I couldn't agree with you more. The fact is, we're at a point in history where we're more divided than we've ever been.
Yes.
And no matter the issue, whether it's the way we look at employment, whether it's the way we look at politics, whether how we view our government, whether it has to do with criminal law or virtually any arena, there's no arena where we've been as divided as this at any time since the Civil War. What it will take, in my humble opinion, is for us to have some common struggle, some common threat, something that draws us together, because we are far better and far stronger together than we are at fighting one another. And we have adversaries throughout the world that look at us from afar and love the idea that we're fighting each other, and they can sit back and watch.
Well, thank you very much for your perspectives. Thank you. I enjoy the show immensely.
Thank you, William. Appreciate hearing that.
Thank
you for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Once again, I am Jeff Hayden, and you are listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. Tonight, we're discussing selected issues in employment law, in particular relating to government employment. My guests, Ellen Mendelson and Gina Rokanova, have some 45 years of employment law experience between them. Now, while we're speaking about certain specific areas, in particular government employment, you may call regarding any question for our employment lawyers. Again, phone number to us in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you are calling from outside of the San Francisco area, please call us toll-free. Our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And we had spoken about the property right that you have and the protections that you have with your job as a public employee that is a little different from a private employee. And before we move on and start talking about our next topic, which is free speech, for those that are not listening tonight to the World Series and are following with interest, the score has shifted. It is now Boston 4-2 at the end of the sixth. Those who know me know how much I love the Dodgers. Not. Let's talk a little bit about free speech. We were talking about public employees and First Amendment rights. How does that differ than the private sector?
Well, this is one of our Ellen's and my favorite topics. We had a good conversation about this last week. Most lawyers who practice in this area especially rankle when we see folks invoke the First Amendment in their private employment relationship, because the First Amendment will help them not at all if they get fired because of something they say. Public employment, as we discussed a short while ago, is different, although it is interesting that how the way that the courts have tried to draw some lines distinguishing between government as government actor and the police power and government acting as employer. And the government acting as employer gets more leeway to restrict its own employees' speech. It's still limitations on what it can do, but it's more leeway than the government acting in its police power would have.
So one of those considerations is that as the government is regulating the rest of us, it doesn't have such a free hand. It can limit in terms of time or place or manner, but for the most part, it can't get into the content of what we say and say we're not free to do it. A little different on the employee front?
A little bit different, yes. In order to get the First Amendment protection at all, of course, it has to be on a matter of public concern. So if an employee is just voicing something that is just personal, I don't like my boss, I think my boss is an idiot, that's not going to be protected by the First Amendment. That is not a matter of public concern.
No, and what the cases hold is that they have to speak about a public issue, a matter of public concern, and that speech that relates to internal power struggles, for instance, that's not beyond the employee's little niche, is not protected speech. So that and the examples could relate to speaking about going to a public meeting and speaking about a plan to put up a parking lot. And that would be a matter of public interest for which you could not be disciplined by the employer.
So you mentioned power and my little diatribe about the Dodgers, for example, who are trailing at the top of the seventh. That probably wouldn't be protected speech if it were in a government setting and I was an employee.
Your distaste for the Dodgers? I think one could argue that is a matter of public concern. I know a lot of your audience would probably agree with you.
But if I worked the concessions at Dodger Stadium, it might have a greater public concern than it would if I'm perhaps up here doing something unrelated.
Well, I think if you were a public employee who happened to be working at the Dodger Stadium, I don't know in what role that would be, but let's pretend, and you were to express some distaste for the Dodgers, I think you could say that's a matter of public concern. If, on the other hand, you were saying, you know, my boss who runs this concession stand is a real stinker, and I don't like the way he manages me, that's a different story. That would be your private concern and therefore not protected. Of course, I don't know of any public employees that work at the Dodger Stadium.
No,
so.
Neither do I. Police officers, actually.
Oh, yeah, you got that.
Police would be there.
We did have a question from a caller asking about union organizing and whether that's protected speech. And I would ask you both on the public side and contrast that with the private side.
It's
protected on both sides. In different ways and by different bodies of law. On the private side, it is protected by the National Labor Relations Act, and that is a pretty broad protection. The National Labor Relations Board has said that basically any communication between or among employees about the terms and conditions of their employment counts as protected concerted activities. And there's a common misconception out there that the National Labor Relations Act only applies to unionized environments. It doesn't. It applies to all private sector employers. So if someone is trying to start a union campaign, that is the statements they make in favor of a union are protected by that act. Do you want to talk about public side, Ellen?
In terms of the public employees, and it would be protected under the Myers-Mills-Brown Act, Government Code Section 3300.
Can you get a little closer to the mic?
Oops, I'm sorry. Government Code Section 3300 protects public employees organizing and operating in a union context. If their activities are undertaken in furtherance of organized labor, they are protected by the California Government Code, and it's the Public Employee Relation Board that would adjudicate disputes related to Government Code 3300 Myers-Millis-Brown claims.
And once again, I'd like to remind everyone that our Call a Lawyer Night lawyers are standing by. If you have questions for Call a Lawyer, the number that will not place you on the air is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. You will not be placed on the radio. Each of the lawyers standing by to answer your legal questions off the air are longtime supporters of Call a Lawyer, including in the areas of tax law, real estate law, Frank Adam from Pacifica, in landlord-tenant law, Jessica Chilek from San Francisco, in patent law, aviation law, lemon law, arbitration, Ronald Rohde of Palo Alto. Also in patent law, specifically the preparation, prosecution of patents, and litigation, Myrna Schelling, senior counsel at Carr & Farrell LLP in Menlo Park, and also in landlord-tenant, from San Francisco, Sal Timpano. And again, that number to call is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. Moreover, to take your calls tomorrow, in bankruptcy law, Leon Bayer, certified specialist in Los Angeles, will take calls tomorrow, Thursday, October 25th, between 9 a.m. and noon at 800-477-3111. In workers' compensation law, Robert Wyman, certified specialist in San Francisco, will also take your calls tomorrow, Thursday, October 25th, between 9 and 11 in the morning. His number is 415-387-8100. And in either case, be sure to tell them you're calling from Your Legal Rights. So there's quite a bit of difference in the protection that the government employees have for speech from one source, what the government can do in order to keep the trains running, which is, gives them some ability to somehow limit in some arenas, which in ways they couldn't do with private people that aren't engaged in trying to keep those activities running.
Why don't we talk briefly about the Fourth Amendment, Jeff? That would be an area of your interest in the criminal practice.
That would be of great interest to me.
Uh-huh. Of course, we could probably go on for a couple of days if we're going to tackle the issue of privacy rights.
That's true. Well, in terms of the Fourth Amendment, I think it's important that people know that the employer, everything that's at the workplace is basically belonging to the employer. And they can search your computer, they can search your desk. The fact that a government employer is a government employer does not prevent them from going into an employee's computer or desk. It might prevent them. I was thinking about this on the way here. It might prevent them from searching a private cell phone.
Funny you should mention that. I actually handled a case involving that not so long ago.
What was the outcome?
Well, the employer did it was concluded that the employer did have that right. In particular, because of the circumstances and because the employees understood that their cell phones could be subject to search.
Now, when we're talking about the Fourth Amendment is usually discussed in the context of a criminal case in criminal law, which is my area of expertise.
Right.
And what might add some credence and actually support what you're just saying is that even when we're talking a criminal case, there are certain areas that are carved out where you don't have an expectation of privacy. Everybody knows you're subject to search when you go into the airport. Everyone knows that, well, schooled kids don't have an absence of constitutional rights. Their rights are somewhat diminished and balanced against the needs of the school. So hanging a sign outside your apartment window so that the school can see it that says bong hits for Jesus probably isn't protected speech, according to a recent decision of the U.S. Supreme Court case. But the point being, there are carve-outs from the area where we have an expectation of privacy.
Well, that's exactly right. And you know, Fourth Amendment analysis does apply in the area of government employment. And its cousin, which does not stem from the federal constitution, but stems from this patchwork of statutes and also the California Constitution, which does cover private employees in California, they all kind of come down to the same thing, which is whether the employee had a reasonable expectation of privacy to begin with.
Now, you mentioned Fourth Amendment rights, and of course, when you're talking about the Fourth Amendment, you're generally talking about the United States Constitution. But are there some differences when we're talking about under the California Constitution?
Yes. So the California Constitution provides for a general right of privacy of employees in personnel information that would generally be considered private, that one would have a reasonable expectation would be kept private. So that means private employers as well as public employers can't go blabbing about, you know, someone got fired for this or someone got accused of that or I demoted Jeff because he was, you know, goofed on the air. I couldn't go telling people that if I were your employer.
That's correct. But then again, those rights are circumscribed in some respect and in some cases. And again, the cell phone case that you just discussed, that the employer could search a private cell phone that was left in the office, is that correct?
Well, there are the cases turn on, you know, a lot of it turns on the rules that the employer sets out at the outset. So if you have a rule saying that you know, your backpack is going to be inspected on the way out so we can make sure that you're not stealing anything, and you've got advance notice of that rule, then you don't have any expectation of privacy. You can't because you were told you don't. So a lot of it gets established at the beginning of the relationship.
Mm-hmm. And there's a question up.
Yes. And before we get to that, while we're still on this topic, private sector employees have some other privacy rights, do they not, under various federal and state statutes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are things that don't turn on whether there's a reasonable expectation, and the most prominent of those is medical information.
Correct.
So both state and federal law prohibit employers from asking for certain information. And if they do have certain information, they have to keep it secure. They have to keep it locked. There's prohibitions under the California Family Rights Act and under FEHA of asking for somebody's diagnosis information or the treatment information. An employer can't ask for that. There's also a federal statute called GINA, my personal favorite, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, that prohibits employers from collecting or using certain types of genetic information. There's also a state law that prohibits employers from asking for people's social media passwords and usernames. So there are some very specific prohibitions that protect employee privacy.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. We're talking about selected issues of in employment law, in particular relating to government employee. My guest, Gina Rokanova and Ellen Mendelson, have some 45 years of employment law experience between them. You still have a few minutes to get in one or two last calls. If you have questions about employment law, whether it's government employment or any employment questions for my guests, our phone number in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or if you're outside the local dialing area, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And one last question I have as this call is being queued up. Can a government employer open mail address to an employee?
That's an interesting question. If it's a letter that comes to the government employer address with the name of the employee on it, I can't imagine that there would be any restriction. If it's it's mailed to the address, it has the name of the employee at the employer's. Does it have the employee's title on it? Is there any indicia that it's a private letter versus a business job-related matter? And it's kind of a fact-specific question that I don't have enough information on to answer.
Yeah, there too. There's a question of the expectations, right? It's a policy in many offices, especially some government offices, where security is also an issue, not just the proper management of office mail, where they will tell you at the outset all mail gets opened in the mailroom and then it gets routed. And so in that case as well, there would not be an expectation of privacy. And if you look at some of the things that are getting mailed around these days, you can understand why.
Absolutely.
Interesting day to be discussing that today, given some of the things that have been mailed around the country. And when we have huge buildings, such as the CNN building, Time Warner building in New York City being evacuated because of things coming in the mail, we begin to think maybe we do need to take a step back in that direction. I do see another call working its way back here. We have very limited time for that call. Perhaps we'll get that in the next moment or so. Well, we were talking about the Fourth Amendment. We've already discussed the issue of the mail. And we mentioned some of the special protections under the Fair Employment and Housing Act, the ADA, the National Labor Relations Act, and other statutes. Are there parallel provisions in the California Constitution that rise to that level, give that level of protection?
Well, there's the general protection for personnel information, but the California Constitution doesn't get as specific as the particular statutes we've been discussing.
Elizabeth from Oakland, welcome. You're on Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hi. How are you this evening?
We're that much better now that you're with us.
Oh, great, great. Well, thank you. Okay, so this is kind of an icky little situation that happened. I was working security, and it's at a very, my company is a security company that has a contract with a major arts museum in San Francisco. So what happened was one of my friends there at the museum, really lovely, lovely person, he unfortunately decided to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge and end his life. And this was like a community kind of happening, in the sense that, even the security and then the staff there at the museum, we were all mourning the loss. And they were having some, to make a long story short, they were having like some counseling for the people that were on, for the staff of the actual museum, but not for security. And I found myself getting really overwhelmed. My employer or my supervisor knows that I have some issues with depression or, some mood issues. But in this case, what occurred was someone else was actually supervising that night, and I broke down. I was crying, and this was very soon after it occurred. And to make a long story short, they pretty much, I got a text the next day from the guy who usually does the, like the scheduling supervisor, although he was laid, he was actually on disability, and I was told later he shouldn't have even contacted me. But he told me that I had been taken off the schedule, quote unquote. This happened like back in February, and I've been told that I'm still like employed by them, but I still have not been given any hours. And I've requested hours, and that's what happened.
Hmm. So you don't know whether you're terminated or not. Have you sent an email or contacted?
I know that I'm not terminated. I even got a letter from HR telling me to reach out, and it sounded like they were, like there was sort of a feeling that something wasn't quite right.
Elizabeth, I hate to cut you off, but we are out of time. I'm going to ask both Elizabeth and Jake to stay on the line so we can take your calls as we go off the air. But for tonight, we're out of time. I would like to invite each of my guests to take a moment and sum up if there's any last things you want to tell us.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what a lot of what we've been talking about this evening is just that there are very different bodies of law that cover employees in the public and private sectors, and we see a lot of confusion about that. So hopefully we've cleared some of that up tonight.
Certainly. That's ditto.
And that'll be the last word tonight, ditto. Thank you both. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight has been employment law, and in particular, government employee. My guests in the studio tonight are two attorneys, each with employment law practices that feature government employee issues. Ellen Mendelson from San Francisco. The law offices of Ellen Mendelson, a professional corporation, focuses on representing public and other employees. With over 25 years' experience, Ellen is a member of the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association. Gina Rocanova, a principal at the firm of Myers Nave, is chair of the Labor and Employment Practice Group with more than 20 years of experience in both public and private sector. Gina has negotiated labor agreements with major unions and regularly represents government clients in various labor and employment proceedings. I'd like to thank you both for joining us tonight.
Thank you. You're welcome. Been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure.
We've also been running Call a Lawyer Night. Our thanks to the lawyers taking your calls off the air. In tax law and real estate law, Frank Adam of Pacifica. In landlord-tenant law, Jessica Chilek and Sal Timpano, both from San Francisco. In patent law, aviation law, lemon law, and Better Business Bureau arbitration law, Ron Rohde of Palo Alto. And also in patent law and the prosecution of patents, the preparation and litigation of these patents, Myrna Schelling, senior counsel at Carr & Farrell LLP in Menlo Park. And taking your calls tomorrow, Leon Baer in bankruptcy, and workers' compensation, Robert Wyman of San Francisco. I'd like to thank you all. We'll be back next week with Your Legal Rights, where we'll be discussing Family Law 101. That's here on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. Our thanks to all of you for listening, to our production assistant, Martin McLean, and at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden, and good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. This is 91.7 KALW San Francisco.